Welcome to this Uvula Audio presentation of L. Frank Baum's Policeman Blue Jay. Volume 4, Chapter 12, The Guardian. The next morning ushered in a glorious day, sunny and bright. The sky was clear blue, and only a slight breeze ruffled the leaves of the trees. Even before Twinkle and Chubbins were awake, the birds were calling merrily to one another throughout the forest, and the chipmunks chirped in their own brisk, businesslike way as they scuttled from tree to tree. While the child larks were finishing their breakfast, Policeman Blue Jay came to them, his feathers looking fresh and glossy, and all his gorgeous colorings appearing especially beautiful in the sunshine.
"Today will be a rare day to visit the paradise," he said. "So I've come to escort you to the guardian of the entrance, who I am sure will arrange for you to enter that wonderful country."
"It's very kind of you to remember our wish," said Twinkle. "We're all ready."
So they flew above the treetops and began their journey toward the center of the forest.
"Where's your policeman's hat and club?" Chubbins asked the Blue Jay.
"Why, I left them at home. I'm not on official duty today, you know, and the guardian doesn't like to see anything that looks like a weapon. In his country, there are no such things as quarrels or fighting or naughtiness of any sort. For as they have everything they want, there's nothing to quarrel over or fight for. The birds of paradise have laws, I understand, but they obey them because they're told to, and not because they're forced to. It would be a bad country for a policeman to live in."
"But a good place for everybody else," said Twinkle.
"Perhaps so," agreed the policeman reluctantly. "But I sometimes think the goody-goody places would get awful tiresome to live in after a time. Here in our part of the forest, there's a little excitement, for the biggest birds only obey our laws through fear of punishment, and I understand it's just the same in the world of men. But in the birds' paradise there lives only one race, every member of which is quite particular not to annoy any of his fellows in any way. That's why they will admit no disturbing element into their country. If you're admitted, my dears, you must be careful not to offend anybody that you meet."
"We'll try to be good," promised Chubbins.
"I wouldn't dare to take my own people there," continued the Blue Jay, flying swiftly along as they talked together. "But you two are different, and are more like the fairy birds of paradise themselves than our forest birds. That's the reason I feel sure the guardian will admit you."
"I'm naughty sometimes, and so is Chubbins," said Twinkle honestly. "But we try not to be any naughtier than we can help."
"I'm sure you'll behave very nicely," replied the Blue Jay.
After a time, the rosy glow appeared reflected in the blue sky, and as they flew toward it, the soft and delightful radiance seemed to grow and deepen in intensity. It didn't dazzle their eyes in the least, but as the light penetrated the forest and its furthest rays fell upon the group, they experienced a queer sense of elation and light-hearted joy. But now the breeze freshened and grew more strong, pressing against their feathered breasts so gently yet powerfully that they soon discovered they were not advancing at all, but simply fluttering in the air.
"Drop down to the ground," whispered the Blue Jay,
and they obeyed his injunction and found that close to the earth the wind was not so strong.
"That's the secret I learned a long time ago," said their friend. "Most birds who seek to enter the paradise try to beat against the wind, and are therefore always driven back. But there is just one way to approach the guardian near enough to converse with him, After that, it depends entirely upon his good will whether you get any farther." The wind still blew so strongly that it nearly took their breath away, but by creeping steadily over the ground, they were able to proceed slowly. And after a time, the pressure of the wind grew less and less, until it suddenly ceased altogether. Then they stopped to rest and to catch their breaths, but before this happened, Twinkle and Chubbins both uttered exclamations of amazement at the sight that met their eyes. Before them was a grove composed of stately trees, not made of wood, but having trunks of polished gold and silver, and leaves of exquisite metallic colorings. Beneath the trees was a mass of brilliant flowers, exceedingly rare and curious in form. And as our little friends looked upon them, the flowers suddenly began to chant a greeting, and then sang a song so sweet and musical that the lark children were entranced and listened in rapt delight. Uh-oh. When the song ended, the flowers all nodded their heads in a pretty way, and Twinkle drew a long breath and murmured,
"Isn't it odd to hear flowers sing? I'm sure the birds themselves cannot beat that music."
"They won't try, for the birds of paradise don't sing," replied the policeman.
"How strange,"
exclaimed the girl. "The land they live in is so full of music they don't need to," continued the blue jay. "But before us is the entrance leading through the limbs of that great golden tree you see to the left. Fly swiftly with me and perch upon the middle branch." With these words, he darted toward the tree, and Twinkle and Chubbins followed. In a few seconds, they alighted upon the branch and found themselves face to face with the first bird of paradise they had ever seen. He possessed a graceful carriage and a most attractive form, being in size about as large as a common pigeon. His eyes were shrewd but gentle in expression, and his pose as he stood regarding the newcomers was dignified and impressive. But the children had little time to note these things because their wondering eyes were riveted upon the bird's magnificent plumage. The feathers lay so smoothly against his body that they seemed to present a solid surface, and in color they were a glistening emerald green upon the neck and wings, shading down to the breast to a softer green and then to a pure white. The main wing feathers were white, tipped with vivid scarlet, and the white feathers of his crest were also tipped with specks of flame. But his tail feathers were the most beautiful of all his gay uniform. They spread out in the shape of a fan, and every other feather was brilliant green, and its alternate feather snow white.
"How lovely!"
cried Twinkle, and the bird bowed its head, and with a merry glance from his eyes responded,
"Your admiration highly honors me, little stranger. This is the important official called the Guardian of the Entrance of Paradise," said Policeman Bluejay. "Sir Guardian, permit me to introduce you to children of men who have been magically transformed into skylarks against their will. They're not quite birds because their heads retain the human shape, but whatever form they may bear, their natures are sweet and innocent, and I deem them worthy to associate for a brief time
with your splendid and regal race. Therefore, I have brought them here to commend them to your hospitality and goodwill, and I hope you'll receive them as your guests.
What are your names, little strangers?
Asked the guardian.
Mama calls me Twinkle,
said the girl.
I'm Chubbins, said the boy.
The guardian looked attentively at the blue jay.
You know our regulations. No birds of the forest are permitted to our paradise.
I know that very well. I'll await my little friends here. It's pleasure enough for me to have just this glimpse of your beautiful fairyland. The guardian nodded his approval of this speech.
Very well. You shall remain and visit with me. If all forest birds were like you, my friend, there would be little danger in admitting them into our society. But they are not, and the laws must be regarded. As for the child larks, I will send them first to the king, in charge of the royal messenger, whom I will now summon.
He tossed his head upward with an abrupt motion, and in the treetop a chime of golden bells rang musically in the air. The flowers beneath them caught up the refrain and sang it softly until another bird came darting through the air and alighted on the golden limb beside the guardian. The newcomer was differently garbed from the other. His plumage was orange and white, the crest and wing feathers being tipped with bright blue. Nor was he quite so large as the guardian, nor so dignified in demeanor. Indeed, his expression was rather merry and roguish. As he saw the strangers, he gave a short, sharp whistle of surprise.
My dear Ethel, said the guardian, oblige me by escorting these child larks to the presence of His Majesty the King.
I am delighted to obey your request,
answered Ethel the messenger brightly. Then turning to Twinkle and Chubbins, he added,
I trust you will find my society agreeable, knowing our flight to the royal monarch of paradise.
Twinkle was too much embarrassed by this politeness to answer at once, but Chubbins said,
Sure thing,
in a matter-of-fact voice, and the messenger nodded gaily and continued,
Then we will go, if it pleases you.
He spread his wings in a flash of color and sped away into the paradise, and the children eagerly followed him. Chapter 13. The King Bird. More and more magnificence was unfolded as they advanced into this veritable fairyland of the birds. Vines of silver climbed up the golden trunks of trees and mingled their twining threads with the brilliant leaves. And now upon the trees appeared jeweled blossoms that sparkled most exquisitely in the rosy-hued radiance that, in this favored spot, had taken the place of sunshine. There were beds of plants with wide-spreading leaves that changed color constantly, one hue slowly melting into another, and no two leaves on the same plant having the same color at the same time. Yet, in spite of the vivid coloring that prevailed everywhere, each combination seemed in perfect harmony and seemed to delight the senses. Bushes that emitted a grateful fragrance bore upon slender branches little bells that at times tinkled in the perfumed breeze and played sweet melodies, while here and there were clusters of fountain lilies that shot sprays of crystal water high into the air. When the water fell back again and the drops struck against the broad leaves of the plants, they produced a melodious sound that was so delightful that Twinkle thought she could listen to it for hours. Their guide flew silently on, and the two children were so amazed by their surroundings that they had no words or questions or even remarks. The scene was ever shifting and becoming more and more lovely and fascinating, and the paradise was more extensive than they had thought it. By and by, Ethel, the messenger, approached the central part, where there was a great arbor thickly covered with masses of pure white flowers. Some of these were large, like chrysanthemums, and mammoth white double roses, while among them were twined smaller and more delicate blossoms, like the bells of lilies of the valley. Ethel entered the arch of the arbor and flew on, for it was of great extent and continually enlarged from the point of entrance, so that at last the child larks found themselves in a lofty circular chamber banked on sides and roof with solid masses of the snow-white flowers, which filled the air with a sweet and agreeable perfume. The floor was also a mass of white blossoms, so that the place resembled the inside of a huge cornucopia.
But the eyes of the little strangers were not directed so much to the arbor itself as to the group of splendid birds that occupy the flower chamber and perched upon a wide-spreading bush of filigree gold that rose from the middle of the floor and spread its dainty branches in every direction. On the lower branches sat birds of marvelous colorings, some having blue the predominant tint in their feathers, and others green, or scarlet, or brilliant yellows. In strong contrast with these were a few modest-looking birds with soft brown feathers covering their graceful forms. They sat silently upon the lowest and most retired branch of the golden bush. But still greater was the contrast of all present with the magnificence of the one occupying the topmost branch. This gorgeous creature, whose splendor dominated the white bower, at once won the children's attention, and they had no doubt they were gazing upon the king bird of paradise. The feathers of his head and neck were so fine that they looked like a covering of velvet. These seemed to be, at first, of a delicate lavender color, but the children observed that they shone with a different tint at every movement the king made. The body feathers, also, as glossy as velvet, were of a rich royal purple, shading to lavender and then to white upon his breast. His wing plumes were white, tipped with specks of lustrous gold. But by far the most astonishing part of the king's plumage was that which consisted of the dainty fern-like plumes that rose from his body and tail and spread in graceful and bewildering curves both right and left, until his form seemed to be standing in a feathery bower of resplendent beauty. All the colors of the rainbow were seen in these delicate feathers, and against the white background of the arch, this monarch of the feathered world appeared more royally magnificent than any words can describe. Both Twinkle and Chubbins gasped with amazement and delight, as at the command of Ephel, they alighted upon a lower branch of the golden bush and bowed their heads before the ruler of the bird's fairyland.
"Ah, whom have we here?"
asked the king in a soft voice, as he strutted proudly and turned himself upon his perch.
"Strangers, your majesty," answered the messenger. "They are sent to you by the guardian of the entrance, because they are gentle and innocent, and are neither birds nor mortals, but part of both."
"They are certainly very curious,"
remarked the king, staring at the human heads upon the lark bodies.
"May I ask you, little strangers, how you happen to exist in your present form?"
Twinkle, tossing her head to throw back a straggling lock of hair that had fallen across her eyes, began in her sweet voice to tell the story of their enchantment. And not only the king, but all the birds of paradise, listened intently to her words. When she had finished, the king exclaimed,
"Indeed, my dear child larks, you are worthy to be our guests in fairyland. So it would please me if you will be as happy and comfortable as possible, and enjoy your stay with us as much as you can. My people will delight to honor and amuse you, and Ephel shall continue to guard you wherever you go."
"Thank you,"
returned Twinkle earnestly, and Chubbins added in his blunt way, "Much obliged."
"But before you go," continued his majesty, "tell me what you think of my royal personage. Am I not beautiful?"
"You are indeed," replied Twinkle. "Only..."
"Only what?"
asked the king as she hesitated.
"Only I'm sorry you're so vain and strut around so much and want everybody to see how beautiful you are."
"Why should I not? Is not vanity one of the great virtues?"
asked the king in a surprised voice.
"My mama says people ought not to think themselves nice or pretty. With us, to be vain is a fault, and we're taught to be modest and unassuming."
"How remarkable!" exclaimed the king. "And how very thoughtless your mother must be. Here we think that if God creates us beautiful, it is a sin not to glory in his work, and make everyone acknowledge the kindly skill of the Supreme Maker's hand. Should I try to make others think, or should I myself think, that I am not most gracefully formed and most gorgeously clothed? I would be guilty of the sin of not appreciating the favor of God, and deserve to be punished."
Twinkle was amazed, but could find no words to contradict this astonishing idea.
"Well, I hadn't thought of it that way before. Perhaps I'm wrong, Your Majesty, and certainly you are very beautiful.
Well, think it over,
said the king graciously.
Learn to be grateful for every good thing that is yours, and proud that you have been selected by nature for adornment. Only in this way may such rare favors be deserved. And now the royal messenger will show you the sights of our paradise, and try to entertain you pleasantly while you are our guests.
He turned aside with these words, and fluttered his waving feathers, so that their changing tints might dazzle the eyes of all observers. But immediately afterwards he paused and cried out,
"Dear me, one of my wing plumes is disarranged! Help me, ladies!"
At once the small brown birds on the lower branches, who had been modestly quiet because they had no gay plumage, flew up to the king, and with their bills skillfully dressed his feathers, putting the wing plume into its place again and arranging it properly, while the other birds looked on with evident interest. As the lark children turned away to follow the messenger, Chubbins remarked,
"I'm glad I haven't got all those giddy feathers."
"Why?"
asked Twinkle, who had been rather awed by the king's splendor.
"Because it would take all my time to keep him smooth," answered the boy. "The poor king can't do much more than admire himself, so he don't get to have much fun."
Chapter 14. A Real Fairyland. As they left the royal arbor of white flowers, the messenger turned to the left and guided his guests through several bright and charming avenues to a grove of trees that had bright blue bark and yellow leaves. Scattered about among the branches were blossoms of a delicate pink color, shaped like a cup and resembling somewhat the flower of the morning glory.
"Are you hungry?" asked Afel.
"Oh, I could eat something, I guess," said Chubbins.
The messenger flew to one of the trees and alighted upon a branch where three of the pink cup-shaped flowers grew in a row. The children followed him, and sitting one before each blossom, they looked within the cups and found them filled with an unknown substance that both looked and smelled delicious and appetizing.
"It is royal amal," said their guide,
busily pecking at his cup with his bill.
"Help yourselves, little ones. You will find it very nice indeed."
"Well," said Twinkle, "I'd be glad to eat it if I could, but it wouldn't do Chubbins and me a bit of good to stick our noses into these cups."
Afel turned to look at them.
"Ah, that is true. It is very careless of me to forget that you have no bills. How are you accustomed to eating?"
"Why, with spoons and knives and forks," said the girl.
"Well, you have but to ask for what you need here," declared the royal messenger.
Twinkle hesitated, scarcely knowing what to say, and at last she spoke boldly.
"I wish Chub and I had spoons."
Hardly had the words left her lips when two tiny golden spoons appeared in the flower cups. Twinkle seized the spoon before her in one claw and dipped up a portion of the strange food, which resembled Charlotte Russ in appearance. When she tasted it, though, she found it delicious, so she eagerly ate all that the blossom contained. When she looked around for Chubbins, she found he was gone. He had emptied his cup and carried the golden spoon to another blossom on a higher limb, where the girl discovered him eating as fast as he could dip up the food.
"Let us go to another tree," said Afel. "There are many excellent things to eat here, and the variety of food is much more agreeable than feasting upon one kind."
"All right,"
called Chubbins, who had succeeded in emptying the second cup. As they flew on, Twinkle said to the guide,
"I should think the blossoms would all be emptied in just a little while."
"Oh, they'll refill in a few moments," replied Afel. "Should we go back even now, I think we would find them all ready to eat again. But here we are at the Canona bushes. Let us taste these favorite morsels."
The bushes on which they now rested had willow bark branches with silver balls growing thickly upon them. Afel tapped lightly upon one of those balls with his bill, and at once it opened by means of a hinge in the center. The two halves of the ball opened up, lying flat like plates. On one side, Twinkle found tiny round pellets of cake, each one just big enough to make a mouthful for a bird. On the other side was a thick substance that looked like honey.
"The proper thing to do," said their guide, "is to roll one of the pellets in the jelly and then eat it."
He showed Twinkle how to do this, and as she brought her golden spoon with her, it was easy enough. Ephel opened a ball for Chubbins and then one for himself, and the children thought this food even nicer than the first they had eaten.
"Now we will have some fruit," declared the messenger.
He escorted his charges to an orchard where grew many strange and beautiful trees, hanging full of fruits, that were all unknown to the lark children. They were of many odd shapes and all superbly colored, some gleaming like silver and gold, and others being cherry red or vivid blue or royal purple in shade. A few resembled grapes and peaches and cherries, but they had flavors not only varied and delicious, but altogether different from the fruits that grew outside of the bird's paradise. Another queer thing was that as fast as the children ate one fruit, another appeared in its place. And they hopped from branch to branch and tree to tree, trying this one and that, until Chubbins exclaimed,
"Really, Twink, I can't eat another mouthful."
"I'm afraid we've both been stuffing ourselves, Chub,"
the girl replied.
"But these things taste so good, it's hard to stop at the right time."
"Would you like a drink?" asked Ephel.
"If you please,"
Twinkle answered.
"Then follow me," said the guide.
He led them through lovely vistas of wonderful trees, down beautiful winding avenues that excited their admiration, and past clusters of flowering plants with leaves as big as umbrellas and as bright as a painter's palette. The paradise seemed to have been laid out according to one exquisite symmetrical plan, and although the avenues or paths between the trees and plants led in every direction, the ground beneath them was everywhere thickly covered with a carpet of magnificent flowers or richly tinted ferns and grasses. This was because the birds never walked upon the ground, but always flew through the air. Often, as they passed by, the flowers would greet them with sweet songs or choruses, and the plants would play delightful music by rubbing or striking their leaves against one another, so that the children's ears were constantly filled with harmony, while their eyes feasted on the bewildering masses of rich color, and each breath they drew was fragrant with the delicious odors of the blossoms that abounded on every side.
"Of all the fairylands I've ever heard of or read about," said Twinkle, "this is certainly the best."
"It is. It's just a peach of a fairyland," commented Chubbins approvingly.
"Here is the nectar tree,"
presently remarked the royal messenger, and he paused to allow them to observe it. The tree was all silver, silver trunk and branches and leaves, and from the end of each leaf or branch dripped sparkling drops of pink-tinted liquid. These glistened brightly as they fell through the air and lost themselves in a bed of silver moss that covered all the ground beneath the tree. Ephel flew to a branch and held his mouth open, so that a drop from above fell into it. Twinkle and Chubbins followed his example, and found the pink liquid very delightful to drink. It seemed to quench their thirst and refresh them at the same time. And when they flew from the queer, dripping tree, they were as light-hearted and gay as any two children so highly favored could possibly have felt.
"Haven't you any water in your paradise?"
asked the little girl lark.
"Yes, of course," Ephel answered. "The fountain lilies supply what water we wish to drink, and the lustrous lake is large enough for all of us to bathe in. Besides these, we also have the lake of dry water, for you must know that lustrous lake is composed of wet water."
"I thought all water was wet," said Chubbins.
"It may be in your country," replied the royal messenger, "but in paradise we have both wet and dry water. Would you like to visit these lakes?"
"If you please,"
said Twinkle. Chapter 15. The Lake of Dry Water. They flew through the jeweled gardens for quite a way, emerging at last among the trees to find before them a pretty sheet of water of greenish hue. Upon the shore were rushes that, when swayed by the breeze, sang soft strains of music.
"This," announced their guide, "is the Lake of Dry Water."
"It looks wet, all right," said Chubbins in a tone of doubt.
"But it isn't," declared Ephel. "Watch me, if you please."
He hovered over the lake a moment and then dove downward and disappeared beneath the surface. When he came up again, he shook the drops of water from his plumage and then flew back to rejoin his guests.
"Look at me! My feathers are not even damp."
They looked and saw that he spoke truly. Then Chubbins decided to try a bath in the dry water, and also plunged into the lake. When he came to the surface, he floated there for a time and ducked his head again and again. But when he came back to the others, not a hair of his head nor a feather of his little brown body was in the least moist.
"That's fine water," said the boy lark. "I suppose you birds of paradise bathe here all the time."
"No," answered Afel, "for only wet water is cleansing and refreshing. We always take our daily baths in Lustrous Lake, but here we usually sail and disport ourselves, for it is a comfort not to get wet when you want to play in the water."
"How do you sail?"
asked Twinkle with interest.
"I will show you."
He flew to a tall tree nearby that had broad curling leaves and plucked a leaf with his bill. The breeze caught it at once and wafted it down to the lake so that it fell gently upon the water.
"Get aboard, please," called Afel,
and he alighted upon the broad surface of the floating leaf. Twinkle and Chubbins followed, one sitting in the front of their guide and one behind him. Then Afel spread out his wings of white and orange, and the breeze pushed gently against them and sent the queer boat gliding over the surface of the dry water.
"Sometimes when the wind is strong," said the royal messenger, "this frail craft upset, and then we are dumped into the water. But we never mind that, because the water is dry, and we are not obliged to dress our feathers again."
"That's very convenient,"
observed Twinkle, who was enjoying the sail.
"Could one be drowned in this lake?"
"I suppose an animal like man could, for it is as impossible to breathe beneath dry water as beneath wet. But only birds live here, and they cannot drown, because as soon as they come to the surface, they fly into the air."
"I see,"
said Twinkle musingly. They sailed way across the lake, and because the wind was gentle, they did not upset once. On reaching the farther shore, they abandoned the leaf boat and again took wing and resumed their flight through the avenues. There was a great variety of scenery in the paradise, and wherever they went, something new and different was sure to meet their view. At one place, the avenue was carpeted with big pansies of every color one could imagine, some of them, indeed, having several colors blended together upon their petals. As they passed over the pansies, Twinkle heard a chorus of joyous laughter. She looked down and perceived that the pansies all had faces and resembled those of happy children.
"Wait a minute,"
she cried to Chubbins and the guide. And then she flew downward until she could see the faces more plainly. They smiled and nodded to the girl lark and laughed their merry laughter. But when she spoke to them, Twinkle found they were unable to answer a single word. Many of the faces were exceedingly beautiful, but others were bold and saucy, and a few looked at her with eyes twinkling with mischief. They seemed very gay and contented in their paradise. So Twinkle merely kissed one lovely face, who smiled upon her, and then flew away to rejoin her companions.